That was my fourth imprisonment, and I was still 17. And I had no more hope there. And I thought second repatriation was going to happen. It meant to be happen as well. And if it happened, I was going to be executed.
Coming up on British Thought Leaders, Timothy Cho talks about his incredible escape from North Korea. Imprisoned in an impossible situation, Timothy searched for hope.
During the darkness of suffering and what I couldn't expect, what could come, and even death I felt waiting for. But what I learned from their suffering did not destroy my faith, it refined.
He discusses how the ruling regime controls people by idolizing the Kim family.
You are surrounded by the brainwashed and indoctrination of the Kim family to speak, think, and act as Kims. And I thought Kim actually was my God. When the first Kim died, when I was 7, I cried. And I asked my father, "Father, are we all going to die? Because our God died."
Welcome to British Thought Leaders, I'm Lee Hall. Today I'm sitting down with commentator and campaigner Timothy Cho, who escaped from North Korea. Timothy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So you escaped from North Korea twice. Before we go into the detail on that, could you just tell us a bit like what it was like growing up in North Korea, what your childhood was like, and what a young man in North Korea would think and feel?
North Korea is a dark country. It's a large prison country. When I actually met King Charles III in October last year, and he visited the Korean community in Kingston area, it's a small area, a town called New Malden. Well, he came and asked me, "How did you escape? Was you not scared? And you were imprisoned. And any family still remained in North Korea?" So, of course, we didn't have that long minutes to talk about it, but which I briefly answered to him that we survived. And we're very happy and we're grateful for our new story. Different life living in the United Kingdom. So it is a large and dark prison country, and there are 26 million people. Right. And when you see through the Google satellite, the country shows great darkness. And even Elon Musk, a few months ago, he tweeted with a Korean map of between darkness and half side of South Korea with lots of light. And if you want to see between democracy and dictatorship values, divide a country and see after 70 years what it becomes like. Exactly what North Korea shows today. And there are complete information blockade, and both from outside and inside. As you can't even watch things from outside, you and I and other my Western friends, we do that on our weekend hobby, you know, anything on Netflix, YouTube, and even Disney social media also continue have some entertainment you can watch. Well, all these things completely banned. There's no internet, no Facebook, no YouTube. And a few weeks ago, there was on BBC News, two North Korean young men, 15-year-olds, they were sentenced to labor camp after they watched South Korean drama. Mm-hmm. And it did happen in front of hundreds of kids. So the video footage was someone recorded it secretly. And somehow one of the BBC reporters able to obtain it and smuggled out. And that was teenagers. And what about last year, 2-year-old boy was sent to prison camp because his parents' hidden Bible was discovered. Any kind of religious materials in North Korea is completely banned. It is a crime above the crime. And those few teenagers who watched the Squid Game, that drama, again, was quite popular drama, you know, on Netflix, South Korean drama, and they were executed. So the country itself is locked, closed, isolated, darkness, and even within the country, between towns, cities, where I can travel either to Scotland, Manchester, with train ticket, I can travel as we do that. But in North Korea, you have to get travel documents, permission from authorities. It's kind of permanent lockdown, as we experienced the pandemic and not long ago. So that's the first picture of a complete lockdown. And then when you see second picture of the basic human rights that we're talking about here, to what to wear, what to choose, what hairstyle you want, that is not allowed in this country. You can't wear what you want to wear. So it's a common thing that we have a democratic system. We choose to what we want to wear. In the morning, you wake up, I'm standing in front of a mirror, and what shoes you want, what tie you want, what shirt, suit. And all that options is not available in North Korea. And you have to have certain hairstyles, certain pants, and the size of the dress. It cannot be like a short. There are certain length. Government give you standard and size of a dress, pants, shoes, tie. All this is controlled.
So is that controlled by when you go to the shop, you don't have any choice, or are you actually given some rules?
Well, schools, of course, you can't wear what you expect to wear.
Right.
And people go to work, they can't wear whatever they want.
Are they told by the work, you must wear this
yes.
and this?
Right. That's been standardized from the moment you're born. So we were very kind expected what to wear, what you cannot wear, what you can share, what you cannot share, what you can hear, or you have to pretend to not heard. And that's starting from age 12 months, and brainwashed education where it starts. I have children, and my boy, actually 12 months, he's now woke. But if I was born in North Korea, and if my son was in North Korea, I must tell him how to bow to Kim family picture frame. Yeah. Every single house in North Korea, the picture frame is hung on the wall. So you must bow to Kim family picture frame. And even outside, there are every city, town, wherever you go, Kim family statues. So inside and outside, you are surrounded by the brainwashed and indoctrination of the Kim family to speak, think, and act as Kims. And I thought Kim actually was my God. When the first Kim died, when I was 7, I cried. And I asked my father, Father, are we all going to die? Because our God died. And not just me. We went to school, every kid, you know, my friends were in tears, crying, banging the floor. You know. We literally thought, I thought he was God. But when I asked my father was a history teacher in high school. I mean, can you imagine what school teachers teach? Those students, which my father actually first escaped when I was 9. That's why he told me later, my conscience couldn't bear it, because keep brainwashing them with fake education distorted, and keep telling them Kims are great leaders, and North Korea is the best country in the world.
So what do people know of the outside world?
Well, when I was escaping, it was about 16, 17 years ago.
Yeah.
So that was my case was the first time I saw, when I escaped to China, I saw a different world. And I watched a couple of foreign dramas that time.
Yeah.
And those brokers who smuggles items between China and North Korea across the border. And of course, that time was the long olden disc tape.
Yeah,
videotape. And the drama, the foreign film first I ever watched was James Bond.
Really?
James Bond. It was 2002, Die Another Day, yeah. With the Hong Kong actress partner. I was so fascinated watching this film. It was the first time I watched the foreign film. But since then, a lot of people escaped, like myself and others. There are 34,000, only 34 out of 26 million. It's a very tiny proportion. And UK, we have a few hundred, thankfully. And second largest diaspora, the big one is in South Korea. And these people also continue, many of us have involved in human rights activities and also smuggling items into North Korea. Mm. So some of them these days do know outside lives much better than inside, mm. but still they cannot see the full picture of what's outside life seem like. So the complete information blockade is continue ongoing in North Korea, and also the basic human rights and freedom of choice, faith and speech and religion, it's completely absent in this country. We grew up without passport, and we didn't expect, or you shouldn't expect, to travel outside. Mm. So you don't actually know how you can travel about. Mm. And that was my pretty much childhood indoctrination, brainwashed, bad Kim family picture from regarded the Kims, oh my God. And every time when I got school invitations, and I tell them, when I ask my father, "Father, are we all going to die? Are we all going to die?" And my father said, "No, son, Kim is not died. He lives in our heart forever. It's literally like God figures, so eternal leader. And we now follow the second Kim. So they now have the third Kim. Mm. And first and second, their bodies actually still maintaining in glass box, like what Stalin did. Yeah. And people, go, when they visit Pyongyang from countryside, and they must visit them and bow to them. Really? Yeah, and so they look like they're sleeping. So they're still keeping their bodies preserved as look like someone sleeping. And huge amount of money goes in there, spending to keep preserve their bodies like that. And that's what God figures. And what shockingly, particularly after I myself became a Christian and practice as well, we give thanks to God that something for able to eat. But in North Korea, when we were nursery, we were told to give thanks to God, Kim family, something that we were able to eat. So we must give thanks, Kim family, we're able to eat this food. Yeah. So that was, we were told to do that.
Right.
And we thought because they were providing us food. And in school, high school, universities, and all whole societies, the organizations, they have every Friday, they have a self-criticism session.
Right.
So this Friday, today is actually Friday. So I randomly pick someone's name up, one of my classmates. So if I pick your name up and I tell you, "Lee, why didn't you not give enough loyalty and love, devotion to the Kim family this week? Therefore, you must put extra effort next week, do better." And then that person up, who I picked up, he also then criticized me. It's like a check criticism session.
So can I disagree and say I did give enough?
No, you can't say anything.
Really?
No. The criticism itself is about we give our loyalty, love to the Kim family. But where do we do that? I mean, of course, some of those who are listening to this interview, if you're a religious person, you may understand we go to church. Mm. We ask God for that forgiveness, whether we have done something wrong or badly, you know, with known or without known. So it's like church practice. They actually put the biblical structures into whole society. Mm. So a lot of people think, oh, North Korea, yes, it is a country, atheist country. It's an atheist state. But when I look at North Korea, it's a cult society. Mm. It's a whole country. It looks like it made a large prison, but at the same time, it practiced to praise, worship Kim family. Every song you learn from a baby, it's the song of the Kim family. History you learn about in the school, over 50% of the curriculum about Kim family. They are like, if I look at the system, it looks like they actually use the Bible whole structures, but took God out and replaced it with the Kim.
Do people there know that they've kind of been brainwashed into this cult, as you call it, or did it take you some time to be out of the society before you realized that?
I can't tell exactly, but there are many people probably don't know.
Okay.
And if I speaking of my own experience, I did not know. I was brainwashed in that way. Mm. That's why I thought Kim was God. Or there was an interview, this elderly lady about 70, over 70 year old. And she actually escaped from North Korea. When a reporter asked her, "Are you now happy? You are now saved. You are now escaped from North Korea." But what she said, "I am sad because I left our dear leader back home. Right. I'm the only one got out from here." So they think the country is poor, going through darkness. It is because of not him, but because of those people who serve him do not do good work. Mm. So that brainwashed.
Yeah, yeah. So when you were young and your parents left North Korea, and how can you remember that point?
So my father is probably, he confronted something due to political context and he had to escape. Otherwise, whole our family was taken to prison camp. So he escaped. And now then I started to see the real inside situation in North Korea, which I had to survive not that long, but a few years until I went to live with my grandmother. I also lived on the street. Mm-hmm. Begging food and sleeping on the street and train containers on the bridges. But it was not me only. There were hundreds of thousands of homeless children at that time in the 1990s, which over 3.5 million people died of starvation in the 1990s. What happens politically and geopolitically, Soviet collapsed that in the 1990s. And remaining communist dictatorship countries, including China, Vietnam, they all opened the door with outside because they knew they couldn't feed their own people within isolation. You know? Mm. And that's why even Vietnam and China, they don't have a story of hunger and starvation these days. But North Korea, they closed the door. So the first consequence of that was killing millions of people, and people started to escape.
So your mom went with your dad to escape?
Family escaped. And I couldn't go to school because the government gave me a traitor's son's tag. So when father escapes to another country, now son and children receive a son of betrayer tag.
Son of a traitor, yeah. You were labeled.
That's right, I was labeled. So North Korea mentioned we don't have any classification because it's a communism, socialism, whatever it is. Or they even call Kim Il-sungism. But they then have built their own classification systems. It went very far. So top ruling class about 20 or 25% and the middle section about 55% and the rest of it they call enemy class, hostile class. Once you are labeled there, now you get discriminated against everything. So which I couldn't go to school. I mean, if I went to the taboo, you know, your father betrayed this country, particularly my father was history teacher in high school.
So you were put into the hostile class when your father left, right?
And so where I survived without education, it was tough. I loved to study. This was one thing, one of the things when I came to Britain. I was, even today with some of my friends this morning, I mentioned impossible thing. And journey has become possible while I could go to universities in the UK. In North Korea, I couldn't go to university. Mm-hmm. Even working in the UK Parliament, have I ever imagined the journey if I go back there? No, mm-hmm. Absolutely. This is why I, time to time, I have to pinch myself whether that I don't live in a dream, you know, myself. And at age 17 then, I went to military office because you finished high school that age. I told them I want to join the army because that I want to have my own independent life. But the military officer told him, "You cannot join the army. Your father betrayed this country. So where can I go?" And they said, "We will send you to coal mine where you have to crawl into the cave and digging coal out. But often the mine collapsed and people killed and disabled." And I realized at that moment, wow, even if I had children in North Korea married, and my children would be born with a crime tag, because it passed on to generations and generations. Then that was a turning point where I made decision to escape, which I did not realize I had to escape twice and imprisoned four times during that journey. But what I quite shocked during my first escape to China, I saw different country.
So how did you escape?
So we have a border between China and North Korea. It's 408 kilometer border river called Tumen River. And also North Korea has other borders with South Korea, but it's the most heavily militarized zone in the world, which you can't escape. But you could try to go to cross the border to Russia, and it's far the mountain you have to cross. But only China is quite feasible, and the lights you could see. Well, I also lived on the border area. China was just about 100 meters distance from where I lived. And so first escape, I escaped with a few people. We walked the Tumen River together. But if you were discovered, you could be killed. So it's a 50-50 as well, die, survive or killed. And so we managed to cross the border to China, and now we split up, and I chose my own way, which I went to a city market around 6 p.m. It was the first time I saw people wearing different clothes and hairstyles, or colorful lights, different colorful lights spinning on the market, and the exotic food smell. I almost fainted on the floor. And that moment I was thinking, wow, until this age, I was told I was living in the best country in the world, but there is no even electricity in that country. The average hours people can supply the electricity, two hours each day. And now in China, still China was less developed at that time. It was a heaven compared to North Korea. But we North Koreans, when they cross the border to China, it's not safe because we born without passport, and the United Nations Refugee Convention ratified those countries who signed the Refugee Charter. They can actually provide us asylum, the basic protection if we go, because North Koreans persecuted economically, politically, and socially, every category of it. But China does not agree with us that we are refugees. Mm-hmm. They keep saying they are economic migrants. So they arrest us, send us back to North Korea. This is one of the things why there have been hundreds of thousands of prisoners in North Korean gulags. Most of those prisoners are from here, who've been arrested and sent to prison. They know we could be killed and tortured and executed when we sent back.
So at this point, you've escaped and then you're getting sent back. You've already been labeled a son of a traitor. You must have felt pretty scared on the way back to North Korea. I mean, what was going through your mind?
Yeah, even last night, someone asked me the same questions. And so China was not safe. My journey actually continued, and someone helped me able to get to Mongolian border, because we had to cross other one or two, three borders until you arrive at a safe refugee camp, something like that. So I planned to go to Mongolia. Right. So if I go to Mongolia, I was able to go to maybe South Korean embassy in Mongolia. But at the border, well, I met other 17 North Korean refugees. So we were a group of 18 people and tried to cross the Mongolian border into Mongolia together. Mm. And youngest were 4 and 6 year olds in my group, the whole family of 7 people. And sad, unfortunately, we were arrested at the border. And where we were arrested by Chinese military. And 3 days we were on the bus and sending and transferring us to the border city still in China. And during those 3 days, we were tied up, handcuffed, and feet tied up in case we were trying to escape, run away. And now we were sent back to North Korea. I was terrified. I still can wake up with that feeling of the moment when I arrived in North Korea. They all call us betrayers. When you see Kim Jong-un's sister, she often use quite aggressive language on the media. She told us defectors, escapists, we are human scum. So when we sent back to North Korea, we would be traitors. And the first question the police asked us, anyone in this group been to church, met missionaries, prayed in China, which I did not expect. Because you grew up in North Korea without any religious education. You don't even know what Catholic is, Protestant is, Muslim is, Hindu is. No. And I quite shocked when they asked about those questions. Mm. And now I was in North Korean prison. The prison is on its basement. I could see quite many prison and cells in there. Could be hundreds of prisoners. And dark, very dark, and everyone looked terrified. And we didn't have names. We were given number, all of us. And we could not call prison guard's name. We had to call them sir, as with very respective warden title. And in my cell, I had about 50 inmates. And we were sleeping, sitting upright against, leaning against each other's back because we didn't have enough space. And I was so tired and terrified through the day from the moment of investigation. And sleeping like this, and early in the morning I felt my back getting really, really heavier because the guy who was leaning against me was really heavy for me. And when my head turned back, his body was falling. So he died while he was leaning against on my back. It felt quite strange when someone dies on your back. And he died from torture, because before I arrived there, he was already tortured and beaten, and no medical treatment, and we were just giving 2 scoops of noodles each day. So yeah, the guy's eyes, it's still in my eyes, it never runs away. And his body dragged out of the cell. And you could hear at night time, you know, people were beating, screaming. I thought I was not going to able to survive from there. Among those 18 of us, I desperately hope anyone except for me who have had survived from me there. When I first came to UK, when I made decision to speak out on the situation in North Korea, I think the first choice I made because of them, what I saw in those who we had, even during the short time, you know, having laugh, sharing food together, you know. And so after a few days, an intense, horrific things went inside. And I was sent to my grandmother's house, where I asked her to help me to make second escape. And I couldn't walk by then. So she found someone in my local area, the lady who helped me to cross the border. She actually crossed the border with me together because I couldn't walk second time. And she's now in South Korea, yeah, which she later managed to escape her family.
So you couldn't walk because of what happened to you in the prison?
Yeah. And the second time come to China, I was quite traumatized. Try to go to the Mongolian border again. So this time I went to American school in Shanghai, where I met other 8 North Korean women on a train to Beijing. On a train in Beijing, and we traveled together to Shanghai. And here, we crossed over the fence of the school, went inside, and we thought the school was safe and able to help us. But the school principal came out and said to us, unfortunately, this is not a diplomatic center, it was a public school, they couldn't help us. So soon many Chinese police came inside and dragged us into police van. It was a huge trauma scene were going on that moment because we resisted and Chinese police were beating us and pulling women's hair out. And meanwhile, many students were surrounding us and in tears watching us. And now we were sent to Shanghai International Prison. That was my fourth imprisonment and I was still 17. And I had no more hope there. And I thought second repatriation was going to happen. It meant to be happening as well. And if it happened, I was going to be executed. If you ask any North Korean escapees, many of us, or most of us, among those 34,000, most of us have had experience watching public execution. In my bag, I have a UN Commission of Inquiry report on North Korean human rights violations. And it was published in 2014, this year, 10 years anniversary, which I spoke at the United Nations Human Rights Council just last week on Monday. And I mentioned 10 years on UN Commission of Inquiry report. And hundreds of people testified what happened, torture. And beating, execution, imprisonment, enforced disappearance, forced abortion. In this report also many people testified where they watched public execution. And I also watched it when I was 11, I think. So the UN is the only space where we can publicly press on the North Korean regime, which I've been doing, and one of the North Korean defectors I've been speaking against over the past 2 years. And when you saw them on the media, when Kim arrested his uncle in the middle of the conference, many British people saw on that on TV. And he was executed by machine gun. And his relatives, very far away distance relatives, even hundreds of them were taken to prison camp. So I was imagining that during my fourth imprisonment in Shanghai, what's going to happen to me. And I was crying every night, not eating, thinking about going to be killed, which I didn't want to be killed. I saw a different world. So when I was crying every night, one of the inmates, I had 7 inmates in my room, all from different countries. And one of them was a South Korean gangster. He was there, which I called him uncle later. And he came asking, why do you cry every night? And we are all curious. There are Japanese, American, Colombian, Malaysian, Chinese, and South Korean. I was the youngest North Korean. And he said, we are very curious why you look very young and in this cell with us from North Korea. First time we see someone from North Korea. So I explained to him what's been happening, what is going to happen to me when I sent back to North Korea second time, I will be killed. And there, this gangster actually, he gave me something that I could read, written in Korean. It was the Bible, first time I actually read the Bible, and which he told me to read. I thought he was crazy. I didn't even know what the book was. And he also suggested me to pray to God for my survival. So I didn't know who God was by then and why I should pray. But only thing I did, one of the reasons, because there were no one I was able to expect how I could be saved. So when I was praying, the praying became like my last hope. It was the only thing I was thinking, oh, if I pray desperately, maybe that someone who is existing called God come to rescue me. I even thought like James Bond action film, helicopter coming, you know, destroy prison building, get out, came out with the rope. You know. Literally, I was hoping the rope kind of feeling I had. So I prayed so many times, please give me freedom, you know. And if I have your freedom, I will devote all my life to you. I was desperate. It was the really darkest. This was one of the things, because of that, my suffering there during those imprisonments. Today, I feel like anything, even what I going, what I've been through since I arrived here in the UK, I've been overcome every step of the challenges compared to what I had experienced during my escape, survived, and imprisonment. So praying and was very hope. I was hoping someone could come and rescue me. But when two men came and visited me in the prison, I thought they were from North Korean embassy. And I was shaking, I was. But when I went outside, it turns out they were not from North Korean embassy. They actually from, one guy was a South Korean diplomat, the other guy was a Westerner. I'm not quite sure if he was a British or American. But they told me, you have good news, and that China made a very unusual decision to deport me and my crew to the Philippines instead of North Korea, which was impossible, actually. And it would not have been happened, usually. And so there was a behind the story that a 13-year-old girl, she wrote an email from the school when we arrested. Among those students, one of them emailed to a reporter that we traumatized watching their arrest and forcibly dragged them into police van, beating them up. And we were young and powerless, we couldn't do anything. But as a reporter, could you do something for them? So this reporter was moved, someone like you now, they urged Washington Post, CNN, and BBC, and other major media to stand and campaign and also press on the Chinese government to do not send them back to North Korea because they would be killed. So the media actually influenced international petition. First time I saw the influence of that was hugely powerful. And China made a reluctant decision to offer us diplomatic passport and deport it to the Philippines. And I still remember the day I was leaving the prison cell. The gangster actually was in tears, you know, who told me first to pray to God for my survival. And then he also told me, when I actually told you pray to God for your survival, I didn't know this could happen to you. It was unforeseeable anything, you know, it was very unpredictable darkness. All Chinese police told me that I would send back to North Korea. So when the last day when I released from the prison, all these inmates, they were celebrating my freedom, giving me a hug. That's how I left that prison, released, and sent to the Philippines. And from there, we were able to have a choice, and which then later I managed to arrive in the UK in 2008. But that suffering, what I experienced, it was a while ago, but it never feels that was a long distance of my life. It always come close. And now I am I use the past suffering the way my work I'm doing today. Because even during the darkness of suffering and what I couldn't expect, what could come, and even death I felt waiting for. But what I learned from there, suffering did not destroy my faith, it refined. And that has been my strong weapon, that faith, whatever I do. And even during my time in the UK, I have had faced a huge amount of nightmare, trauma. And even when I went to trauma counseling, the doctors told me, your PTSD is like over 100%. You know? But I challenged every time. And compared to what I went through, so fighting against it, it was also not easy. And we a lot talk about these mental health issues. Because that was I also had gone through. But and it was each time I was going through it, I fought very hard and hard. And one of the particular then exciting opportunities in the UK, I was able to study from the moment I arrived. So I actually carry pen, you know, in my pocket, which is my obsession and hobby, collecting pens wherever I go. And I often, when I'm speaking at schools and universities, talk about pen, how that education is a powerful equipment we can equip, use to change the world, and make a better world. And this pen has been teaching me English schools and universities. And after university, I was able to work in parliament as parliamentary assistant. And now I work with UK All-Party Parliamentary Group of North Korea, which secretariat serves 20 members of parliamentarians and based in parliament, and which I use this platform to speak out against those regimes. It's not only North Korea these days, when we see what persecution and suppression, oppression, and crimes against humanity is massive. And even when we see what's happening in Iran, China, Hong Kong, and other countries. And so North Korea is one of them, and also on top because of the systematic persecution and oppression and crimes. And there are still 26 million, my fellow North Korean brothers and sisters. So I've been to many countries over the past few years and speaking and telling them what's going on. And also at the same time, encourage people in Western societies, particularly young generation, our freedom is not something granted. It's not something it came automatically. Also, your grandparents and others, they sacrificed their life, their lives, and brought this freedom. Once this freedom is taken, then it becomes like North Korea. And when you try to bring it back against it, it takes a while, takes huge amount of cost. Like now, how many years, 7 years, North Korean people under this darkness. And even I've been in the UK for 15, 16 years, I still can't go back to my hometown. And I miss it. But I'm also grateful that I have my second home and community where I have supporters and friends and church and community where I now settled and have my own family. But I also want to see that I want to see them have the what we have here, life. And I do have faith in it. It will happen. But until then, we have to stand up. And we are facing huge amount of threat right now. As you can see what's happening world in Ukraine. And North Korea has shipped thousands of containers of weapons, ammunition to Russia. And they are using those ammunition against Ukrainian people. Ukraine alone, it has produced 7 million refugees now. And each day, around 40,000 people have fled from their home. None of us, you want to run away from your beloved home and families and relatives and friends. They are forced to flee. And now there are how many refugees around the world? 110 million refugees. And through this opportunity, whoever watches and this program today, I want to ask them to please stand with us and also other persecuted and suppressed people around the world.
Thank you for joining us, Timothy.
Thank you for having me.